It's Ingram plowing ahead and fighting for it, and that's a touchdown. The Saints have the block, and they have the touchdown.
Ryan still has it. Good play action fake to the end zone, and it's caught by Roddy White for the touchdown. Here's Coleman. Ball comes out. The Saints pounce on it for the recovery. And again, the ball's on the ground, and they signal Saint football. Over the top, wide open for the touchdown to Watson. They take the ball right out of the hands of Ryan. And that'll just bring us one snap to the end.
In what will forever be known as the Ben Watson game, the Saints have knocked the Atlanta Falcons from the ranks of the undefeated 31-21 on Thursday night. This is Greg Rosenthal. I'm sitting here with Chris Wesseling. We're going to talk about the Thursday night game and then send it to the rest of the crew, Dan Hansis, Mark Sessler, of course, and we'll preview all of the Week 6 games. But let's start with this one, Wes. How surprised were you to see this Saints offense kind of looking like the Saints offense again in the second half?
Yeah, well, they were given a lot of prime field position, too. With the, you know, I when I think of this game, the luck factor evened out for the Falcons. They were first team in NFL history to be losing in 4 of 5 games in the fourth quarter during their 5-0 start. So that was incredibly lucky. This was incredibly unlucky to have the unforced error of Matt Ryan hitting his fullback and fumbling, the center hitting his own leg on a shotgun.
Well, I don't know if that's bad luck. That's just bad football. That's bad play. That's unforced errors. It's luck for the Saints. It's just bad play for the Falcons, right?
I think that's bad luck.
Okay.
I mean, when you turn around and your fullback's there, that's just bad luck.
Okay, the center dribbling the ball off his leg was pretty sad. And then, Tevin Coleman also had a fumble, which was a good play by the Saints, that killed another drive. And that's what I remember from this game, too, just the Falcons in the first half going up and down the field but having nothing to show for it.
And then the blocked punt touchdown, which was reminiscent of your boy Steve Gleason's 2006, and you said they have the statue outside the stadium with that play?
They've had the statue of that play since 2012 outside the stadium. I asked Wes if he could even remember where he was when that Steve Gleason punt happens, and Wes doesn't even remember. I mean, that's one of the greatest moments, certainly in Saints history, certainly the greatest punt block in NFL history, I believe, and probably the greatest moment in Superdome history if you ask a lot of Saints fans. And it was uncanny that it was against the Falcons and it just looked the exact same. And the NFL.com did a great video kind of putting those two plays right next to each other on the website.
On the night that Steve Gleason was given the George Halas Award.
Right.
It was cool. Superdome was pumped up.
It was. And for one night, it was old times. You had Drew Brees being very precise. Not flashy, but did throw in 2 or 3 really nice throws, 312 yards, only 9 incompletions. You had a defense, which, they got lucky, but they did win the turnover battle 3-0, so that's kind of the old school Saints defense. And then you had a tight end going crazy, and instead of Jimmy Graham, it was Ben Watson having a random career game in his 12th season.
He was just wide open, it seemed, running free through the Falcons secondary because I think the Saints realized that Robert Alford and Desmond Trufant have been playing pretty well against wide receivers, so why not pick on the linebackers and safeties? And Ben Watson now has 62 more yards than Jimmy Graham this season.
That's crazy. It's great to see. Ben Watson, who Drew Brees after the game said he looks up to, he says he's a leader, he motivates me every day, and just the way people talk about Watson, that's why he's been in the league so long, so it's a cool moment for him to have that kind of night on a national stage. I give credit to the offense, too, because they were without their top two left tackles, Teron Armstead, who's very good, and then they lose their first round Andrews Pete, early in the game. So they overcame some problems. They couldn't run the ball. But really, does it tell you a little more about the Falcons? It's a bigger deal for the Falcons to lose a game. Now they're at 5-1 than the Saints. Saints got to string a few of these together to really believe they're back in it.
I thought it was interesting that Phil Simms pointed out Sean Payton expects Drew Brees to have an 80% completion rate when he faces his own defense like the Falcons. Mm. And I think if you have a good quarterback, tonight's game might have told you that he can hit that tight end down the seam over and over again.
Well, there's a reason they keep coming back. They're not built to blow teams out. I mean, they don't have a pass rush. The Atlanta does not have a pass rush.
Vic Beasley's disappeared the last few weeks.
The linebacker position is not great for Atlanta. It's really a defense that's fundamentals, hustle, energy, but that's not going to dominate. So this was a concerning game, and it's a game where Matt Ryan, who we've talked about again and again, is having a fine season. I wouldn't say a great season, and that continued tonight with an okay performance. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't great.
Yeah, and Roddy White's a shadow of his former self. You basically got the two playmakers, Julio Jones and Devonta Freeman. Freeman had another great game. Looks fantastic. He's so decisive. Always has that burst going through because he's hitting the right hole.
Well, that puts the Falcons at 5-1. The 16-0 talk was ridiculous. I don't care how easy the schedule is. They don't have a lot of tough games, but I think this shows that they're going to lose some along the way, and we'll see how they respond to it. We'll see if the Saints can string together a few of these and make it interesting. We've kind of dug dirt on their season already, but this was a very encouraging performance by them. They're back at 2-4, and let's just get to the rest of the games, don't you
think?
Let's
do it.
All right, let's send it over to Dan.
The Around the NFL podcast is 25% Jewish.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with Gentiles and Jews. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Nice to get a little recognition to, you know, start off.
Dan force-fed, or Greg force-fed that down Sydney's throat.
Well,
opener.
Jewish, you know, it's cultural. You know, I'm I don't know. What is cultural about
it is no, I know exactly what you're saying. And if, well, this is really for the theology podcast.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's save this for the theology podcast. I had some thoughts about being a Catholic, but we'll save it for the pod.
I've got a lot of thoughts about being Catholic.
A lot of off-season chatter in the theology podcast coming up. This is the Thursday. Wow, navigated out of there and saved
you
all
did a
of
great
our
job.
Jobs.
Thank you.
I like Woody Allen movies, you know.
All right.
So do I.
We got it. We got it. You know.
Another non-controversial figure. Thank you, Greg.
You could go to synagogue every once in a while.
I haven't gone. No, but you could be Jewish without having gone there. I mean, it's affected my...
I want to kill you.
Sorry, I know you're trying to move.
Dan seamlessly gets us out of a corner. Greg mercifully drags us right back in to destroy us.
All right. This is the Week 6 preview edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We just heard from Chris and Greg the Thursday night matchup between the Falcons and Saints. Listen. Taped this a little earlier in the day, but I'm sure it was great. You guys do really good work, and you know your football.
Thanks, Dan.
And speaking of, you know, the idea of doing great work and knowing your football, Greg Rosenthal on Thursday's edition of Around the NFL, a television show, a show that we used to be on but no longer are. Greg is on the show.
We're working on getting back on the show.
We were once on the show 5 days a week for a short period, canceled. Greg now on the show. On
That's
Thursday,
all that matters, though.
Talking his QB index, and it really is. It is a little bit of a kick because no one has supported the QB index more than the old Zeuser, and now there you are, the bright lights of Hollywood upon you.
A kick like
a star.
You're saying in a positive way, a kick, not a kick in, you know, the backside. What are you saying?
However you want to look at it.
Okay. Yeah, it was fun.
But you and Mike Silver did a really good job debating the QB index, which has Matt Hasselbeck at number 10, no joke.
He's played two games, and one of those two was sensational, and the other one was very good.
Josh McCown still lodged at number 29 on that list.
And we're gonna get back on. I mean, maybe our listeners can tweet at NFL Network to get us back on there. It had nothing to do with us. You know this, Dan.
You'd be better off writing to Santa Claus.
You know we're working behind the scenes on fixing some of the issues. Didn't have to do with us.
Sure.
And we're gonna get back there.
Okay, Joan of Arc.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
I'm Jewish. They didn't teach us that.
Stop steering us back to that.
Blind spot.
That's the theology podcast. So, yes, we are now the turtle to Greg's Vinny Chase. when it comes to television, that's all good. Johnny Drama and the other guy. So that's good.
E?
E.
Yeah.
So you're saying you're going to put all your energy into supporting me, and I kick the door down, and then the money just starts coming.
Well, that's the last choice that's been given to us, so we'll pursue that.
But basically, the idea is to just whatever gets handed to you in life, you need to react to that and just deal with it as best you can. So we will ride your coattails now that actual group glory is no longer an option.
Well, like Vinny Chase, you know, I have big-time personality, and I'm ready to handle this. I'm ready to carry you.
And you're also equally good-looking. to Vinny Chase.
Vinny Chase was a cardboard box. It never made sense that he was the movie star.
The QB index.
I was trying to be sarcastic before. I mean, about the personality of Vinny Chase. It never made sense.
Adrian Grenier, are a listener of the podcast, Greg doesn't mean it. Grenier might listen.
It's fair.
Maybe he was just playing a character. That
it's
was
fair, dog.
So today's show, now that you've heard about the Thursday night game, you heard about Greg's rise to stardom.
Now for the rest of us.
Watch with a telescope. We will now get into all the games on Sunday and Monday. And, Greg, we have four teams on bye this week, the Dallas Cowboys, the Oakland Raiders, St. Louis Rams, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That leaves 28 teams out of 32, and that means 14 games, which means 12 on Sunday and one on Monday. Thank you.
I'm impressed.
Thank you.
I'm impressed that you've really nailed it. Took
you're a regular rain man.
It took 6 weeks. But you're there.
Thank you. So let's go. Why don't we get into the games? A lot to get to. Let's start with the 1 p.m. games, and we will start with an undefeated team, the Denver Broncos, 5-0. They are running away with the AFC South. The next closest team are the Chargers and Raiders, both 2-3. So Denver in great shape to win yet another division title. And now they go to Cleveland to beat the Browns.
Well said.
Spoiler alert. To meet the Cleveland Browns, a team that they have defeated 10 straight times going back a long time. Mark, do you remember the last time the Browns beat the Broncos? How old were you? What were you doing?
I was a sophomore in high school. I was 17. And
yikes.
Basically, maybe 16.
I say, you're an old sophomore.
No, I was 16. It was the end of Bud Carson's career. He was about to get fired and replaced by interim coach Jim Schaffner. Another notch in our belt for anyone who doesn't believe that interim head coaches are going to guide in a team anywhere. He promised the media, we will not lose again. And he went something like 1-10.
Way to aim high, Schaffner.
Jim Schaffner also on the sideline interrupting the call during the 1980 Cardiac Kids playoff team to introduce the red right 88 play.
Mm. Oh, smart move. That guy seemingly.
So it's been a long time.
Had all the answers. So, yeah, so it's been a long time, yes. And, Greg, I will say this. The Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning, I defended him earlier in the year. Now I got to back off a little bit because I need to see him make progress. And we simply did not see any progress last week.
He stepped back. The last 2 weeks, he's playing like a rookie or a second-year player where he's solid for most of the game, and then he makes two or three big boneheaded mental mistakes. But the difference between a guy like him and Cutler, for instance, or even maybe not Matthew Stafford this year, it's not like Peyton Manning's mixing in any wow plays with those mental mistakes. So right now you have a guy that they're running the ball on third and long. They're throwing screens on third and long that are way behind the line of scrimmage. They're telling you they're not that confident in Peyton Manning by the way they're calling games.
Mike Pettine this week walked into the offensive meeting room while they were watching cut-ups of Denver's defense and asked basically, wait, is this just the plays where they either made a sack? Was it the sack list, basically? Just the plays where they blew up the offense? He's like, no, this is essentially just play after play. This is what they're doing snap after snap. I mean, the defense, like the way they're getting after the quarterback, and it's the secondary too. You know, Carr last week is getting chased down a ton, and when he had anyone open, the guy had maybe half a yard or a yard on the cornerback or safety.
Well, there's a chance that Aqib Talib misses this game. We'll see. DeMarcus Ware is going to miss this game. So maybe, just maybe, if those two guys were out, and Demaryius Thomas isn't 100% healthy, maybe the Browns are catching him at the right time. The thing about the Broncos at 5-0 is, as good as they are, they're in every game. Like, I don't think this is an unwinnable game for the Browns by any means, because the Broncos don't have an offense right now that's going to run away and hide from you. They scored 6 points in the black hole. A Peyton Manning team against the Raiders scored 6 points.
Do you know what you should have told Mike Silver?
Oh, what?
Tim Tebow in 2011 averaged more touchdowns per game than Peyton Manning's offense has averaged this year.
It's been a different situation. Connor Orr, who's been something of a renegade with the picks this season, he has picked the Cleveland Browns. He's the only one that did. I believe, Mark, initially you did pick the Browns, and now you went to the Broncos.
Mm. Well, no.
A crisis of confidence.
No, I had it in there for a bit. Well, it's because they took a screen capture, and it's sitting on our site, and I'm getting absolutely destroyed on Twitter by people
from
Denver.
So you changed it for that?
No, I changed it after I went back and watched the Broncos-Raiders game. Mm.
How about Duke? I mean, how about Duke Johnson?
I like Duke Johnson.
How about Josh McCown? He played so well that for a point, I know we got to move on. For a second, you were like, there's a little bit of Mark Sessler's like, well, maybe this is,
I didn't think he played that great
this
against
is the guy that we're waiting for. I was really talking about the Chargers game.
I got to give Mike Pettine a little credit too, because I and many other people were killing him for putting McCown back in the lineup, and he has played pretty well for three straight weeks now, and they're still not a playoff team. There's still a case to be made that you should be playing the young guy right now, but they're a competitive team. They're frisky, and McCown has not been the problem on any level.
Above or below 50% chance the Broncos defense knocks Josh McCown out of this game.
Well, they're hurting. They're hammering quarterbacks.
He's overdue.
And he runs himself into more trouble than any quarterback
right,
in the league.
Yeah. I want to see if Robert Turbin plays. I think that he would be an upgrade, honestly, over Isaiah Crowell this season.
McCown gets credit for that touchdown, which was a dump-off, and Crowell made a bunch of people miss.
Well, their running backs, which they didn't do any last year, are actually pass-catching backs this year, and he did look good. But as a running back, he's left a lot to be desired this whole season.
Think anybody calls him Turbo? Makes sense. It would be a missed opportunity if they haven't.
Maybe in Seattle they did.
Okay. Moving on, the Chicago Bears, who, listen, I'm not going to say we're nervous that we forked the Bears, but they're showing some life. A team that everybody's like,
not nervous.
Are they going to win a game? Well, now they're 2-3, and they're being respectable, and Jay Cutler's playing okay for Jay Cutler, and now they go to Detroit to face a winless Lions team where home field advantage doesn't mean jack S, let's face it. And this is a game, another winnable game, where the Bears can get to 3-3. But however, Greg, you used to make picks, but you don't anymore. It's disappointing. We've talked about it. I'm disappointed. I think everyone else is too. But you did a now hit earlier where you believe that the Lions are about to finally get off the schneid.
Well, as 0-5 teams go, they're a very good 0-5 team overall. I mean, even in last week's game, they were moving the ball. They had more yards than the Cardinals in the first half of that game as they're getting blown out. And yeah, they're overdue. The Bears have won some scrappy games. They deserve credit. Jay Cutler's doing a lot with a little. And I think Adam Gase has had a positive impact. I don't know. I'm not a footwork expert, but I do know he has great pocket.
Don't sell yourself short.
I know he has great pocket movement, and they're having a hard time getting Cutler down when defenses get to him.
What about Vic Fangio's defense? I think it's been a little underrated.
Fourth in total defense. That is, what kind of sorcery is that?
That is shocking. And if maybe they beat the Lions, I don't think so though.
From the NFL Media Research Guide, Chris Wesley. Matthew Stafford has a 0.5 passer rating when targeting Megatron on a pass that's 15 or more yards downfield. It was 82.9 last year. Now, does that speak more, Chris Wessling, to the offensive line or to Matt Stafford or to Megatron?
All of the above and Joe Lombardi, the play caller. Mm. I think it speaks to everything. Everything's intertwined in that offense for how bad they've been.
Calvin is not the same player, though.
He's not. They've got the Bengals picked on Kerry Williams last week. The week before, Calvin Johnson couldn't do it.
If the Bears could win this game and get to 3-3, well, it doesn't matter at this point in the season, but if there was voting for Defensive Player of the Year, I think your boy, Wes Purnell McPhee, would have to be in the mix.
Really?
He's been as good week after week making game-changing plays, I think, as just about anyone. You don't think so?
He's played great. I don't know about Defensive Player of the Year great.
Here's something crazy. An 0-5 team being picked across the board by the entire Around the NFL
really?
Team and also the fans, the fan consensus on NFL.com. So everyone is saying probably the same thing. Like, listen, the Lions are bad, but they're not this bad.
They're not
bad.
Right. They're not
the Bears are terrible
bad.
On the road. This makes sense to finally get a win. We'll see if it happens.
By the way, if yes. you wanted to sign it up, we have a weekly pick'em league. That's
rich coming from you, Greg.
Around the NFL. I'm just saying, we never mention it. There are a lot of guys going up against us. Who knows who's in first place right now? Maybe it's
I know who's in last place.
Speaking of picks, before we move on to the next game, Mark, you approached me something you had thought about privately for some time and maybe you wanted to bring up here.
Well, I mean, I feel, you know, my performance, if you want to waste 5 minutes of time and go looking at the standings in our picks, I am picking like a 7-year-old that's never watched the sport. It's embarrassing, and I believe that I should be forked, and we talked about that on the last show. And my proposal is that, you know, there's been a lot of discord because Greg, who is fun to work with and is good at picking games, he won last year, and it's not been good for our show that he's not on. And I think he should take over my spot because it's the challenge he needs. Get back in with a last place team. And if you can turn this ship around, Greg, you have proven yourself to be one of the true greats in the industry.
How about that, Greg?
You're 15 games behind. That's impossible.
That's you need the chance. For the third time in this podcast history, I'm about to compare somebody to Michael Jordan. Greg,
all right, go ahead.
Greg didn't have any challenge. That's part of the reason why he quit picking games. It's like when Jordan decided to play baseball. He had won three championships in a row. It was like, all right, what – who do I have to beat now? And that's how Greg stopped picking games.
You have a chance to walk into Mark's Factory of Sadness, bring in some workers off the street, put them back to work. This is America, damn it. And get these machines out of here, all these robots. Get some hands and some smiles and feed some families, Greg. This is your chance.
We need some fight for your rights of every man in the background.
If this was the WWE, you guys have come up with a very intriguing plot line.
Yes.
I have to admit that. But it also seems like a highly created thing just to get Mark, because he's lazy and doesn't want to do his, you know, he doesn't want to do the picks.
That's true.
Well, that's not true.
I think he's thinking about the podcast.
I am. I'm thinking about that first. And I know that Greg doesn't want to do it.
50-50.
He doesn't want his face attached to my record. Like, on the site itself.
Well,
he doesn't want Greg Rosenthal's headshot attached to my results.
Well,
I would say we could split it down the middle and put a big paragraph above the picks to explain to readers what
ridiculous.
Is happening.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
That was a bridge too far there, Mark.
Oh, well.
All right, moving on. So is that a yes or no, Greg?
Right now it's a no. But
what?
I'll
now, that's good,
it.
Though.
I'll think
start.
About it.
Huh. All right, moving on. The Houston Texans, one of the worst teams in the NFL because of their ghastly game of musical chairs going on. Brian Hoyer back in the starting lineup, and he faces a Jacksonville Jaguars team that has not been forked by us. They're 1-4. They've had good play from their quarterback, which is getting certain individuals very excited at this table. Perhaps everyone at this table. But if they don't beat the Houston Texans, come on, Wes.
Well, yeah.
Fork them.
The Jaguars need – Sendak Marks hasn't played all year. He's coming back from ACL surgery. He should be back any game now, and he's their best defensive player. Last week, Paul Posluszny, who's been their leading tackler, was out too. And without those two guys, they're just not a very good defense. So maybe they can become a little frisky with those two guys back in the lineup in the next few weeks.
They really have struggled to find big-time difference makers on defense. It's an okay team defense, but it is no better than the day Gus Bradley started, really, in terms of identifying guys that you think, okay, that guy might make a Pro Bowl, or that guy could be a future All-Pro. Sendak Marks, I would say, was the one guy that they've had in 3 years, and he hasn't played at all this
year. Their first overall pick, or the third overall pick in the draft, that guy would have helped as well.
Yeah, but it doesn't help that the contrast of Dan Quinn – you know, his replacement as defensive coordinator of the Seahawks goes to Atlanta and with a lot of the same players has them looking completely different.
Well, let's give some love to Bortles, you know, on this show. What is it that gets you going, Wes? Because when I watch him, I think he's thrown in five or six wow plays practically a game his whole career where he shows it all. He's got pocket movement. He's got the big arm. He can put some touch on the pass. Like he reminds me mostly of Cam Newton and Andrew Luck, I guess, if I had to pick someone. He reminds me a little bit of John Elway. What do you think of that?
Wow. I would say what gets me excited is the same thing that got all of us excited in his preseason of his rookie year, that he looks like, to me, a young Ben Roethlisberger. Mm. That he can move well in the pocket. He's a big body. He's an athlete. He can make all the throws. And it seems like he does pretty well on the run, too.
He's aggressive. The difference, I guess, the last couple weeks watching him is he's just not having those – big mistakes, and he's not having those stretches where he's wild. He's still a little wild compared to – but that's why he reminds me a little bit of Cam Newton. Maybe he can be a Cam Newton type of player.
I mean, they finally have some developing talent around him too. Last year was just – they didn't want to play him last year. That was the blueprint. We're going to put Chad Henne in because they knew how bad their protection was and how little talent there was, and he bottomed out at the end of last season. I mean, game after game, he's playing better this year.
We should give Allen Hurns some credit. I believe he's like fifth in receiving or something.
Yeah,
receiving yards.
The two Allens, if you have them, you have Julius Thomas. I mean, that whole plan is coming together. On the other side of things, is there a team that you – it's amazing that a team with J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney would be right near the bottom, if not the bottom, of teams I want to watch play football.
Well, yeah. It's because of the whole other side of the ball.
Right, but it's just they have to be – I'm trying to think.
They have DeAndre Hopkins too, who's fun to watch.
Honestly, Hoyer, and I'm not a Hoyer guy this season. I was last year, but he played an excellent
That's true.
An excellent game last time
out. DeAndre Hopkins had one just a dominant game in that game and got lost in the shuffle.
Here's the problem, though. Yeah, Hoyer played very well when he came on, but he made one of the worst passes I've ever seen at the end of the game.
He's so going to do that.
He's always going to be that guy that you start to get in on him. You start to get into Cleveland Springsteen. You start to believe. And then it's like, oh, wait, this guy is not very good. They're still in the same bad spot.
I go back to my theory that they need to replace the quarterback, switch Mallett and Hoyer every series. Because if you look statistically what they've done off the bench when they invariably keep putting someone on the bench, the reliever has come in and lit it up. But it's anyone who starts the game who is prepared for on any level for
seems
by the
like
defense.
A problem.
Renegade, well, it's a disaster is what it is.
Renegade Connor Orr was the only one in the group to pick the Texans. But so did the fans. The fan consensus does not believe in the Jags.
How's Connor doing overall in the picks?
He is one game behind Wes
okay,
and I.
So he's competitive.
And seven games behind Patrick, who's doing very well,
but
70%.
He's doing it with a lot of style. So even just staying in the
yes.
mix. Just the just him.
You don't get to provide analysis anymore because you're no longer a game picker.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you were about to get critical there, I could tell. You were about there was a other side
to
that.
I also liked Mark's idea earlier that if you put like a potato sack or something over your head whenever we talk about the picks.
Well, it's more like a black hostage hood over Greg's face. He's not allowed to express opinions or especially be critical of anyone who did participate.
Your thoughts, Greg. How about that, Greg?
I'm speechless for the first time.
Shame.
All right. Moving on, the Cincinnati Bengals, they are undefeated, and they just pulled off something wild by coming back from 17 points down to beat the Seahawks. That is something that has not been done, to come back in the fourth quarter down 17 points and then win. It has not happened since 2011, which tells you not only did they pull it off, they did it against a historically great defense, maybe not right now, but still a great team. So now they're 5-0, and now they travel to Buffalo. This is an interesting game with the Bills, who have been 3-2, have been one of the best-looking teams in the AFC for three of those weeks. But they might not have Tyrod Taylor, and actually there's probably a good chance they don't. He practiced in a limited fashion today. Rex does not want to make an announcement, but I guess our reports that we're hearing is that it will be E.J. Manuel behind center, which to me, Greg, would be a real bummer because if that wasn't the case, this to me would be a coin flip game.
And I still think they could win the game with E.J. Manuel. I give Greg Roman, Mark's boy, a lot of credit for the offense he's dialed up with Taylor. Now, maybe it's a huge drop off from Taylor to Manuel. But the way he's kind of cooked up schemes, it reminds me a little bit of what Michael Lombardi used to say with battleship offenses or battleship defenses. Greg Roman is out there a little bit. And he has a very specific plan for that specific game. And sometimes it just hits and guys are open and he's going to score a lot of points. And sometimes it doesn't hit at all. And maybe he can get a big hit with E.J. Manuel.
Yeah, I think from the Bengals side of things, Greg, last week you said that Greg Hardy had one of the best games by a defensive end all season. Carlos Dunlap's fourth quarter wasn't very far behind Greg Hardy's whole game. Dunlap was wreaking havoc, and your boy Pac-Man has been awesome this year.
He's been terrific. I mean, the Bengals' defensive line is really very deep. Dunlap's playing great. Atkins is playing great. Wallace Gilberry's playing pretty well. And, oh, by the way, thanks for Michael Johnson back now, a solid starter that we just like – that the Bucks – no, they didn't give him back, but they – lost him in free agency and got him back at a much cheaper price.
This is definitely one of the more interesting tests for Dalton so far. I mean, dealing with the Buffalo's defensive line in Buffalo, which they're a different team there at home. I don't know, though. I really – like, I am waiting for the stinker game still, but not the same way that I was 3 weeks ago because something with Dalton is so completely different. The first drive last week when they scored a touchdown against Seattle – two players that we've talked about a bunch, Marvin Jones and Eifert. He pegged Marvin Jones with a beautiful throw downfield that he just did not make at times last season. And then the next play, Eifert in the end zone.
Well, this is such a test going up against Stephon Gilmore and
Ronald
Darby.
Are they the best cornerback tandem in the league?
They're so physical. And we kind of were waiting, how is this defense going to be under Rex Ryan? How is it going to be different? Because it was a very good different defense last year. And I think how it's different is in that secondary. Those two cornerbacks are at another level. And Marcell Dareus, I think, is at another level, too, on the defensive line. He's stepped
There's
up.
Another difference. They don't get nearly as many sacks as they did under the last few defensive coordinators.
Teams are throwing the ball very quickly on him. I think that's basically the MO. The other thing is I think the linebackers have taken a step back. Nigel Bradham and Preston Brown are not having a particularly good seasons this year, and they were big-time players last year.
That's weird that the sack total would be so far off when 2 years ago it was a Rex Ryan defense.
They have nine, and the Packers probably have 20.
Hmm. Mark, you took the Bills.
I did take the Bills.
Why?
Well, because my bold prediction this week was that Dalton was going to get banged in Buffalo. It's going to be his first down game. But again, I don't think that means the kind of game, he had on Thursday night against the Browns last year where it was like, did he even practice this week? I don't think we're going to see that. But this is going to be, in my opinion, a low-scoring game, like a 17-14 type deal.
This guy got lost in the shuffle, maybe not in Buffalo, but I'm surprised you haven't brought it up because you love to pick on Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan and his cronies, two plays after Tyrod Taylor was wrenched and clearly hurt his leg and was limping, put him out at wide receiver for a play, and then he gets tackled big time out of bounds two plays after getting hurt. Literally, you have the franchise quarterback playing receiver after he got hurt, and then he's limping. It was one of the worst coaching moments of the year.
I was wondering where you were going with that when you said cronies. I thought they were going to be like in Rex's basement smoking cigars and playing poker.
I'll take you to task on one thing, Greg.
Okay.
You made a comment in your most recent QB index that you were surprised that it took Rex so long to locate Tyrod Taylor as a starter. Why don't we give Rex credit? We're always burying him about how he can't figure out how to get a quarterback to play and doesn't have any idea what to do with the position. He got it right in August, and now he's got a good quarterback on his hands.
Well, or that's Doug Whaley.
Oh, whatever.
Bringing
Doug
him Whaley. In.
No,
I don't think
Rex has been talking up Tyrod Taylor for years.
Hmm. So let's give Rex a little QB credit. He's never gotten it before. This one he got right in a big way.
You're right. Give him some credit. Maybe Whaley was pushing Manuel since that was Whaley's first-round pick.
Who's boondoggle.
He did get it right. They took a lot of time there. He's got to get some money. You got to pay Tyrod Taylor. He keeps us up.
You know, they went down. They did the same thing with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I know.
As soon as they paid him.
I don't care. You
gotta got to keep.
Would you have mind Rex Ryan getting Tyrod Taylor for the Jets years ago if that's how long he's been fascinated with this player?
Well, listen, that's water under the bridge, Mark. Let's just move forward as humans. Let's move forward to Minnesota, where the Vikings, who are now sitting at 2-2 and in second place in the NFC North, will host the wretched Kansas City Chiefs at 1-4, and now without Jamal Charles, who's lost for the year. Just a devastating setback to the Chiefs and fantasy owners alike, including Malina Weintraub, who had Jamal Charles is the first pick. It hurts. It hurts the entire team.
Well,
the
you should clarify for listeners that it's not her fantasy team. She has no idea, but you've named your fantasy team after her.
We've named our fantasy team after this AT&T girl from the commercials. Yes, it's slightly creepy. I understand.
I'd rather go to a shopping mall than cover this game.
Oh. Yeah, let's Wes, explain to me why this game is so unappealing, despite having perhaps the greatest running back of all time prominently involved.
The Chiefs are involved. That's all you need to know. What a boring, boring team. We thought they might be a little more exciting this year, and then their best player goes down, unfortunately, with a knee injury. But Alex Smith, how do you get excited watching a quarterback throw short of the sticks and never lead a two-minute drill?
The Vikings have also – it just feels like they're a forgotten team right now. They're very under the radar. I mean, they're 2-2. I thought they were going to be the big trendy, like talked about team. Teddy Bridgewater. He's been fine this year, but
he has two touchdowns.
He has not. I would say
two.
It's very early. He's only played four games, but the trio of Tyrod Taylor, Derek Carr, and Bortles right now are the three kind of up and coming quarterbacks. Where Bridgewater's just been kind of steady.
He's had one really good game, one terrible game, and two games in between.
Yeah.
Well, and Mike Wallace hasn't been healthy.
Yeah, but
and Charles Johnson's not been healthy. Some part of the element.
It's a bad wide receiver group too, though. I mean, Charles Johnson. I know we've been waiting for him to break out for a few years. Mike Wallace isn't Mike Wallace anymore. I don't think they don't have the weapons around this guy besides Peterson at this point.
I wouldn't count them out yet, though, because Norv Turner's done this over and over with offenses. I think he'll be fine.
It's crazy at this point. Remember, at this point last year, we would always have like a weekly Cordarrelle Patterson update, and now we're at the point where Stephon Diggs plays ahead of Cordarrelle Patterson, and no one even blinks.
I took him in the third round of my fantasy draft last year, and it wasn't even thought at the time. It was like, well, that makes some sense. He's a big breakout guy. That's how high people were.
Hey, man,
Patterson
he's gonna be used in the backfield too. Don't you know? That's a savvy pick.
He looks like
part.
The greatest football player in the world.
How many different ways can you write the guy doesn't know how to run a route?
Yeah.
I mean,
such a weird like criticism, too, to have such little ability in that part of the game. You would think at some point you would get better at it.
It's like a writer. Well, he's tons of talent. He's great. Cannot write a sentence. just can't do it. Yeah. Can't get the subject and the predicate.
The reckless Connor Orr was the only one to take the Chiefs in this game.
At this point, it's a bit by Connor.
We haven't even talked to him about this at all, but it's now week after week, it's coming up.
But he puts them in before. I mean, it's not like he sees your picks and picks against them. So
he's a renegade. He's basically what Mark has been trying to do, but he's been able to go about 500 on these type of picks. Whereas Mark, you've probably been going.
Well, I tried last week, and I had five heroes, and I got three of them right, but it was the rest of the games where I went about 1-9.
Yeah. All right. The Washington Redskins and their solid defense heads to the Meadowlands to face the New York Jets in their solider defense. Nailed it. Journalism school. The New York Jets are 3-1 coming off their bye. They face a 2-3 Redskins team. This is the Jets led by, according to Brandon Marshall, the best running back in football in Chris Ivory, which I think maybe is a bit of a stretch. But at times, Chris Ivory has looked like one of the best running backs in football this season. The Jets also, of course, getting back Sheldon Richardson off his four-game suspension. So Eric Decker is also healthy. So the Jets are healthy at home. Everything seems like it's going to be headed towards another win, and that's why I'm terrified about this game against a slightly frisky Redskins team.
I think they're more than slightly frisky. Don't they play pretty close to every team they play up against? I think that Giants game was kind of a letdown on national TV, but other than that, they've been very frisky all year.
They get other teams to play their style, which is a credit to them. They slow the game down, ugly it up. They are the Kirk Cousins of teams. Ugly, low ceiling, and, you know, gets Mark Sessler excited.
No, listen. I'm not
old, ugly, low ceiling Sessler. That's what
they call
him.
Just know he likes Kirk Cousins and the Redskins. So does Wes.
I like Kirk Cousins, but I think I'm also, as I said on Sunday night, he absolutely killed that team with a couple decisions against the Falcons in a game they could have won.
That wasn't his fault. That was a tight end's fault. Charlie Casserly broke down the tape, and you know, he knows more than I do. That was his conclusion.
He also saw the pressure coming and just got rid of the ball a little early. They had 100.
He also led a touchdown drive to tie the game.
They had 100.
Right. That's what I wrote up, that he had a masterful drive to put them into overtime, and he looked like he had more command of that offense than any quarterback the Redskins have had since 2012 with RG3. But it's the complete package.
They were given so many chances in that game, and they had 140 yards with about 7 minutes left in the game, and the Falcons just kept handing it over and kept giving them good field position, and they weren't getting first downs. The run game was a big part of it. The run game, which should be great, has been up and down. You're not really sure what you're going to get week to week.
They feel like an 8-8 team for everything we're talking about, because when they're good, you really want to buy into them, and then the next week that doesn't sustain.
I think this could be a very low-scoring game, for sure. I mean, I think this could be an ugly game that, Wes, you're making fun of my team when we do the podcast on Sunday night, because whether they win or lose, it's just going to be one of those games.
No, I totally think it's going to be low-scoring, because like Greg said, the Redskins kind of take you down into the mud and make you wrestle with them.
We have an one of the more interesting go-get-my-lunch props of the season. It's one of yours, Wes. Kirk Cousins throws for at least 20 touchdowns and 3,000 yards in 2015. Both myself and Greg took you up on that. You take a look at what his projected numbers are right now.
I don't think he has the touchdown.
You got the yardage easy. He actually is on pace for over 3,900 yards, but he's only on pace for 16 touchdowns right now. He only has five.
One three-touchdown game.
Games.
Yeah, you got a chance.
I think he's going to do it.
What's working against me is their style of play, which is to run the ball.
But as long as he stays healthy, the yards, they're going to –
Well, he's fine with the yards.
It's not even going to be remotely close. And if he can play 16 games, you'll have a chance.
One or two big games through the air.
Get Jordan Reed and DeSean Jackson back in that lineup. He's going to be throwing touchdowns all over the place.
30's a lot.
Pretty sure, though.
Blake Bortles had 11 touchdowns all of last year. I mean, 30's a big number.
He stunk last year.
20. 20 is what he needs.
20.
Oh, 20.
20 is very achievable. I think he can do it.
He's got 5 through 5 games.
I didn't take him up on this, correct?
20, no.
20 is pretty doable. You got a chance.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And as far as this old renegade or pick the Redskins, the rest of us picked J-E-T-S. He always picks
I don't think
Jets,
that's crazy, though. That's not crazy.
That's not crazy, no. But when it's every game. When
no,
he's
it's
the only
just
one
funny.
Taking.
It's literally 3 straight games he's at hero picks.
All right. Another great – this is a excellent 1 p.m. game. It will be even better if Ben Roethlisberger is back, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. The Arizona Cardinals, 4-1, the apple of Chris Wessling's eye, the team of around the NFL, travel to Heinz Field to face the Steelers. Some bad news today for the Steelers. Marquise Pouncey, their center, who broke his leg in the preseason, underwent surgery, went on IR Boomerang, was expected to be back. Has to have another ankle surgery, so now his entire season is in doubt, and their backup center has not played very well at all, so that's a bummer. Mm.
So they wasted the boomerang, potentially.
Potentially wasted their boomerang. Big Ben practiced on Thursday, but in a limited fashion, and as our friend Andrew Siciliano, who will be on a little later, said on today's show, whenever a QB is only limited on a Thursday, not typically a good sign. So, Mark, we might see some more Michael Vick, which might not be a great thing because other than one big throw and a couple passes in that last drive was a bit of a nightmare on Monday night.
I think we are going to see him. It sounds like the problem with Big Ben is he said he can't move laterally.
That's a problem.
That he can throw.
That would seem necessary.
I think he's a while away. Yeah, I mean, the Steelers, they can't be the same team and – you know, we talked about it Sunday night, the issues with, you know, his lack of connection with Antonio Brown. And if you just look at how different this team is when Big Ben isn't on the field, like in terms of what they're capable of doing, and completely levels the field.
Big Ben and Shazier. Shazier, I know he's not Big Ben, but I thought he was going to be the best player on their defense. And one of the only chances, I guess, Stephon Tate.
How many games has he played?
He only played 2 this year, right, before he hurt the shoulder. I think he got hurt in week 3. And so that's a big problem. I mean, he's not expected to be back. Martavis Bryant, though, is coming off of his suspension. He could have last week, but they didn't activate him. He will play in this game, so that could give him a little boost.
Well, he got hurt in practice last week. That was so I wonder if he's fully healthy.
He is fully practicing and not on the week 6 injury report.
I think because they're so well coached and they're a veteran team, and they are a team. The Cardinals are less susceptible to overlooking opponents and having down weeks. And that won't even be a problem this week because Bruce Arians has some revenge factor going on after the Steelers treated him so poorly, blamed everything on him when he had a great offense, and that you'd hear the owner and the coach, yeah, we're going to have to run the ball a little bit more. And Arians' offense would just be dynamic. Yeah. And then basically they tried to get him to retire.
Well, they did. They announced his retirement. It's one of the craziest things that's happened. Not only that, they leaked out these stories about, you know, he has to run the ball more or else he can't stay or else he's going to retire. I remember exactly the reporter they leaked it out to. Then they try to retire him. And the crazy thing is, 2 years later, they realize, oh, yeah, we have Ben Roethlisberger. We're going to run that bombs away offense, except you're doing it with a slightly worse or a worse offensive coordinator with Todd Haley.
And they gave Arians a laundry list of, you know, mid-tier backs at best. And then here comes Haley, and he's got Le'Veon Bell.
Arians is one of the only coaches where I think this would actually make a difference for the players, that they want to go out and crush the Steelers for Arians. I don't think players would really care in most cases, but Arians, I think, is the exception.
I agree.
Everyone took the Cardinals to take care of business against the Vic-led Steelers. Moving on, the Miami Dolphins. This is our last 1 p.m. game. The Dolphins are heading to Nashville to face the Titans. This is the first game for interim Dolphins coach Dan Campbell, who had this interesting quote. I'm really looking forward to the Dan Campbell era. Have I mentioned that? Had this quote. When I start thinking, I got to say how I imagine he would say it. When I start thinking about Sunday a little too much, I start wanting to throw up a little bit.
Oh, no.
He's basically like a 1992 WWF wrestler.
He's the Ultimate Warrior?
Essentially.
Except his move is throwing up.
vomiting. This finishing move is vomiting in a
that
toilet.
That would be distracting, though. If you're a Titans player and you just see the coach just barfing all over the place. Like
that's Donovan McNabb's move.
Barfing is always underrated. So, yeah, this is the first game for Dan Campbell and a Dolphins team that really potentially could just be going down in flames now. We'll see what happens. They're 1-3. The Titans also 1-3, but a different vibe around that team, Wes.
Yeah, Ken Wisenhunt really raised my ire, and I won't be picking the Titans in any game the rest of the year.
What? Because 14, look, 12 more weeks.
If you don't want to win a football game, then I'm not going to pick you. And he didn't want to win last week.
I thought
Hell hath no fury like a West Scorn.
He didn't want to win. He just wanted not to lose.
I was thinking of you as I watched this game because it was wildly infuriating to see him punt multiple times on 4th-and-2 at the 40. To try to punt with 3:16 left, down one. It was insane.
I think I read somewhere that only one team in the NFL ever punted in the first half in the opponent's 40-yard line, and Wisenhunt did it twice in one game.
Wow.
The QB whisper, Ken Wisenhunt.
Yeah, and he wants to have –
done with that guy.
Okay.
I liked how they let Mariota, or maybe he just did it himself. I like that Mariota started running last week because he could be, you know, one of
– should be doing that way more.
He ran for more yards last week than he did in the first 3 weeks combined. He also almost outrushed the rest of the Titans' running backs on 23 less attempts. That whole three-pack, let's give 7 carries to Andrews, McCluster, and Sankey is just depressed.
What the hell is going on with that team? Antonio Andrews runs a 4.940, and they're using him as their running back. What are you – Harry Douglas is out there as their number one receiver. Get some players, Tennessee. Play the right ones.
I would rather be called a communist in 1950s America than be a coach labeled a quarterback whisperer. Doom coming your way.
You know Mark Sessler is going to be, you know, skeptical of you if you get that label. You hate the quarterback whispers.
I don't like it when it's attached to Ken Wisenhunt.
That's fair.
He's got to work. You know, one thing Mariota, just watching them, has got to, you know, one thing he doesn't do is ever complete a deep pass.
All year.
Everything he does is really impressive. He's so calm in the pocket. I still love watching him every week, but they cannot get anything going down the field.
Mark, you and I both took the Texans in this, or the Titans in this game. The rest of the crew took the fish.
Bad move, rest of crew.
Moving on, the San Diego Chargers are the next victims to stroll into Lambeau Field. They will face the Packers, who have not lost at Lambeau Field in the stat I dug up. Not with the research notes, but just on my own time. They have not
true.
Lost a game at Lambeau Field since 1861,
Whoa!
The first year
wow,
of the Civil War.
That's crazy. That was Augustus Lombardi's team, right? Wow.
What's great is you will get a sincere tweet or couple from people correcting you on that.
It's happened, and will happen again. The Chargers, the most annoying. If the Titans are the Titans are the most annoying offense in football. The Chargers, for me, are the second. I can't watch anymore.
Dink and dunk.
This terrible offensive line that Phil Rivers has to play with in his back end of his prime. All these three-yard passes, the godforsaken wide receiver screens. I don't think any of this is going to work when you're going to have to score at least 35 points to win this game. I think the Packers are going to trounce them. Anybody disagree?
No.
Totally agree. This couldn't be a worse matchup for the Chargers with – an offensive line that went into last week's game, I think, with 3 reserves starting and had to replace 3 more guys during the game.
That's the thing. They've been unlucky. In their defense, they've literally had 5 different centers and 5 different left guard combos.
Well, now they play against the number one pass defense in the NFL, according to Football Outsiders metrics, and a team with 20 sacks. Second in the NFL in sacks. This is a brutal matchup for the Chargers.
Even though Gurley ran for 159 on Green Bay last week, I still think that their run defense looked pretty good for most of the
game.
That's
how good Gurley was.
That's true. I do want to see how the Packers offense comes out in this game. This is not the toughest matchup in the world. They have not looked like the Packers offense for 2 straight weeks. I think it's fair to wonder why they've only scored 17 points in back-to-back weeks. They could not sustain drives against the Rams at all. They had at one point they had 5 straight drives without a score. Then they get 1 touchdown. Then it's another 4 or 5 without a score. Really, what they're getting is the occasional great big play from Rodgers, And that's it. They're not really moving the ball that well, especially throwing. I mean, you take away Devontae Adams and Nelson, maybe that's it.
You need to get Eddie Lacy back on track.
Yeah, if you are, by the way, if you're a fantasy owner and there's an owner that has Eddie Lacy that's getting impatient, go get him because he will get hot and have roughly
eight
120-yard games.
It's almost like he used to work for Roto-World with that advice right there. Mm,
thank you very much. By the way, James Jones is on pace for 1,200 yards and 16 touchdowns this year.
You mean Justin Blackmon?
If he what did I say?
Well, no, we've established that it's essentially Justin Blackmon went into Green Bay and took James Jones's identity, and James Jones is living in, you know, a mansion.
You know what? I'd be happy. That would mean that Justin's back on track physically. And
they're splitting the money.
The yeah.
It's a good deal for everyone.
It's a good deal for everyone.
Jones doesn't have to do anything.
Jones can't play.
If he has 15 touchdowns and almost 1,300 yards, that's the comeback player of the year, right?
Well, he's got to beat out half the Cardinals roster for that award.
But before we move on quickly, you might get your – you don't like watching this offense, Dan Hanzus. Mm. I'm going to throw out there –
I already don't like where this is going for some reason.
No, you should. I've heard some whispers. Yeah. There's been whispers around the league. Mike McCoy might be one of those coaching names to watch if they don't end up with a winning season.
Really? Wow.
It's his fault that every center he plays gets hurt.
It's a little surprising, but
it is.
A lot of times there's different reasons for why coaches, you know, aren't popular.
What are you trying to say there, Greg?
No, I honestly don't know in this case. I'm just saying it's surprising to me considering his results. That
you want to kick off the L.A. regime with a shiny new coach.
Sometimes you're privy to league-wide scuttlebutt. I didn't know if you had some here.
No, I didn't. I'm most surprised too, but I think he's got to win. Maybe they don't like those boring attacks either.
We all picked the Packers with the exception of Connor, who took
no way. This is becoming
no,
just
he's
a thing. Okay.
No, he's kidding.
That was a joke. Listen, if Mark can joke, I can joke too. I like jokes. All right, guys, it is that time of the show where we welcome in television royalty. I mean, I'm not gonna sugarcoat this at all. This guy, we just before we started said he gets recognized at sporting events.
Well, you asked.
He didn't volunteer recognized. The information.
I'm going to Game 5 of the NLDS, and your first question is, how many times do you get recognized?
That's fair. This is Andrew Siciliano, by the way, of NFL Network.
Hey, guys. If I'm royalty, what does that, like, make real royalty here? Like Marshall or Michael or Irv or Rich or
they're just
our GDM crew?
They're just ex-jocks. You're the real star, Andrew. Don't let anyone tell you different.
They're home in their massive palaces. They won't even know this conversation happened. So
exactly.
Just own the royalty side of it.
This is your moment to shine as a king. All right. So Andrew is with us here. He is going to Game 5. Of the NLDS, the Mets and Dodgers. We will talk about that before he leaves. But for now, let's talk about some football. Let's keep going with the games. And we will start with Andrew, the Carolina Panthers heading to Seattle to face the Seahawks. The Panthers, of course, 4-0, Seattle 2-3 in a spot where they cannot struggle at home in this spot here. So here we go, a big matchup between two teams that they could see each other in January. But the Seahawks, Andrew Siciliano, have to start winning now.
Yeah, they do. You said the Carolina Panthers, of course, 4-0. I don't think that most people knew of course they're actually fits. Not criticizing you, actually commenting the fact that no one knows the Panthers are undefeated.
Post on
right.
No, no, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I had Ted Ginn on last week, and you know they had the bye. And I said, does anyone around where you live know that you guys haven't lost a game yet? Mm. And he kind of laughed at it. And I think they're enjoying it because they are, quote unquote, under the radar. But if you ask your average fan on the street, name the undefeated teams of the six remaining, I bet you most wouldn't get the Carolina Panthers. And this is a huge test for them because they're on the road. They're against a defense that inexplicably blew a 17-point fourth quarter lead last week. I'm actually more curious to see how Carolina does in this game than I am how Seattle does. But on the Seattle side of things, I mean, they've got to somehow protect Russell. Imagine if Russell Wilson weren't mobile. Hmm. He's already on
the
pace to be
a bloodbath.
Right. He's on pace to be sacked a David Carr-esque 70 times.
Wow.
Little known fact, this is the first time all year that the Panthers are not playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Well, that's a great point. They've played the Jaguars, the Texans, the Saints, and the Bucs. So the undefeated mark is probably just not respected.
I think there's two things at play here with this game. If the Panthers win on the road in Seattle, everyone's going to buy in and say, oh,
this is the
real deal. And on the flip side, if the Seahawks lose, it will go from everyone being like, well, they just got to find their legs. They're the same way last year. But if they lose in their building to the Panthers and they fall to 2-4, there's going to be some panic in the air, and people are going to think this might not be their year.
Well, and there should be panic if they go to 2-4. And I fully expect this game to come down to the last 5 minutes of the game. This is the fourth straight year these teams have played. Every time they play, it's close.
And every time it's seemingly in Carolina, too.
That's true, but they play similar styles, that they want to win with defense and running and not open it up. And even with Cam Newton playing so well, and everyone expected his offensive line to be terrible. Granted, they have not played great teams, but they've played pretty well for the most part. I would throw Michael Orr out of that. He hasn't played well, but for the most part,
Michael Orr's been just fine.
He's been fine, and for the most part, they're protecting Cam Newton well. My point is they're not
– Wes, you're like a big brother there.
They're not – Yeah. You know, dialing
everybody
up.
Likes to pick on Michael Orr, and he's been fine.
You bowed up there a little bit, just for the record.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to mess with a bowed up Wes. He gets a certain like tone of his voice, and you could tell him like the earth is round. He's not going to believe you. He's got his vantage point. And my point I was trying to get to is these teams, it's not like the Panthers are going to run away and hide, or the Seahawks, the way this offense is playing. It's a lackluster offense. It's going to be a 12-10 type of game. That's just who these teams are.
Wow.
I want to see on the ground, like, Thomas Rawls looked great against the Bengals.
Yeah.
Better than Marshawn Lynch has, but the Panthers have given up under
– Lynch has never been healthy this year.
That's fine.
And the offense should be playing.
And for the most part, the offensive line for the Seahawks, I thought, played pretty well in that game. It all fell apart late, especially passing the ball. But for the most part, it was their best game of the year.
Panthers have given up under 100 yards the first three games of the year before last week, before the bye. I mean, they've been good against the run.
Two bits of news here also, or one bit of news. Derek Coleman, the Seahawks fullback, was arrested on Thursday. He started two games for them. He's been in the picture for them for a while. Hit and run and vehicular assault are the charges. So he was immediately suspended by the team. So he's out of the picture. Who knows what's going on with Derek Coleman? He's a fullback, obviously not going to win or lose this game, but that's a notable loss as well for the team.
All right, can I raise my hand one more time and say, how in the hell did they lose that game last week?
No, I mean, I'm being dead
Russell
serious
Wilson
here.
Deserves a lot of it, and he didn't.
Sure.
He didn't get any blame. He threw a red zone interception, and then once the Thomas Rawls got that touchdown,
never found.
And the defense scored, they had three first downs in their next six drives, and he missed open receivers. And
some of that's on Daryl Bevel for going run pass every time.
That's fair, but this never shows up in the box score. Wilson does miss some open guys where he just doesn't see them. Like, it's nothing that anyone ever picks on, but he'll have open guys, and it gets blamed on the offensive line because then he starts running around and he gets sacked. But he could have delivered some open passes.
Well, how about Andy Dalton pegging throws downfield?
How about Andy Dalton picking on Cam Chancellor?
Yeah.
This from Chris Wessling, the NFL Media Research Notes. Cam Newton, we know the running game, by the way.
Can't wait for this nugget.
For the Carolina Panthers has not taken off with their running backs. Cam has rushed for 195 yards on 43 carries, two touchdowns. He's on pace for 172 rushes this season.
Which would be a new record.
That would destroy an NFL record held a quarterback that ran 141 times for the Chicago Bears once upon a time
Bobby
in the Douglas. 70s. Exactly, Chris Wessling. Bobby Douglas. That is a lot of carries for Cam Newton and a lot of wear and tear. Got to be careful.
That is a relevant nugget that you somehow
That's what I do!
Dug out of that research
well,
packet.
Well, Dan is a scorned individual who has Jonathan Stewart in his fantasy backfield.
Well, I gotta say,
you can put that one on me.
Wes, who was my my draft consultant on draft day, we're 4-1. We're doing okay.
Hired
Alana
by
Weintraub. You were involved with the hiring process.
I scoped out the talent and hired him.
16% ownership share for Mark Sessler.
Sessler had Kevin Costner as his draft day consultant.
I am on this team, and I actually, you know,
the best thing about draft day, the movie, by the way, not the movie itself, which was bad, but we got to see a screening of it for. The NFL media somehow, they were like, come to our movie. And they cornered Mark famously, as we know. And Mark gave them some some nuggets that led to him being on movie posters.
All right, with a
it's the greatest thing that's ever happened. What was it? It was like what was the exact quote?
Thank God the Browns won.
I do not remember what the quote was, but I can tell you that I initially tweeted out. Wes and I both
it was like
thought
full of heart.
We gave it a B. Yes, yeah. We gave it a B plus.
I thought it was
the time.
Better than most people.
Yeah, I think you said something like it's the Casablanca of sports.
I did not.
The
say
point
that.
I was trying to get to is the thing that Mark was upset about when we left the theater was that Joe Banner had a cameo in the film. To the point where Mark was saying, seriously, you know, somebody should talk to him about pulling him out of it because
he had been fired.
Sends a bad message.
Well, he had been fired. That's why it was
he's
not.
Just trying to ruin
accurate.
Joe Banner's acting career. Is that what you're trying to
do? We all pick the Seahawks, by the way.
We all pick the Seahawks. I have a 10-second story, I promise, about draft day. So we're at the premiere, okay?
Humble brag.
Just a fact.
How many times did you get recognized
in Westwood? Actually, there, no, not at all. It's all movie stars. We're at the premiere. So after the premiere, you know, Darlington, our Jeff Darlington, right, who lives in Miami. I call him Jeff Dolphington on the air because we often send him to Davey. So Darlington had something in the movie, but it was cut, I think, right?
Yeah, he was at the bar
At the bar in the party, and he actually had a line that was cut. Right, where he said something to Costner.
Ooh, that hurts.
So we're at the premiere afterward, at the party afterwards. I think we've had a drink. And Costner's over there with a bunch of people around him. And Darlington and Alex Marvez was there too, our good friend from Fox.
He got cut as well.
He got cut. They got cut. And Darlington goes, basically, and I'm cleaning this up, the hell with this. I'm going in. So Marvez and I get right behind Darlington. And imagine Marvez with his ponytail here. So I'm in front. I'm behind Darlington. Marvez behind me. And basically, Darlington busts right into Costner's conversation.
Which is dangerous.
Just, and then basically just walls everyone else off and does the, hey, I'm Jeff Darlington. We met. My scene got cut. And and Costner played ball.
Oh,
and so we all stood there, ended up having a good conversation with Kevin Costner about Field of Dreams and all this other stuff, too, because Jeff Darlington, dogged reporter that he is, just said, I am going in.
He's like Adrian Brody working with Terrence Malick in Thin Red Line.
Didn't get that one, but sure, okay.
Well, if we're going to tell one more draft day story. So
by the way, just railroad me on trying to explain why that quote came out the way it did. I'm not
okay,
a complete idiot.
I'm sorry.
I am sort of an idiot, though, because I
was
in
full of heart.
Well, no, I wrote them a full paragraph, and I learned a lesson, because when you get put on one of these movie poster things, they use like two words of it, and I wrote it with like three glasses of wine in me in South Carolina on a semi-vacation. Terrible idea. Never review a movie.
You were in South Carolina?
Yes.
My story is they were filming part of that at Radio City Music Hall at the draft in 2012, I believe. And I had gotten there my first day, and I was in the process of getting my security badge, and they have a little room at Radio City. And Frank Langella, the veteran actor who played the owner of the Browns in the film, was sitting there, and you could tell they had been filming during the day, and he was losing his patience a little bit. And he needed to get some type of badge, I think, for the movie or some type of clearance. And eventually Langella, who looks he's losing patience, he just walks out of Radio City Music Hall, and like I followed him, I see him just kind of walking down the street, down 6th Avenue, and then sure enough, there comes like four PAs screaming into the room minutes later. It's like, where's Frank? Where's Frank? And I'm like, Frank's gone, baby.
Frank's gone.
Frank didn't
Dad's
come back.
Dead, baby.
All right. Let's do one more game with Andrew. Let's talk about the Baltimore Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers. Okay, so listen, not a great game here. We got a 1-4 team against a 1-4 team. Not one of our.
I feel like you're intentionally holding the Browns and Broncos out from me.
We'll get them in next week. So this is a rematch of the Super Bowl. So you could try to pump that up if you want CBS. Good luck with that. But the truth of the matter, these are two bad teams. Maybe one is way worse than the other, Chris Wessling. But at the end of the day, two teams that we've forked and don't believe have any chance already this season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any debate. They're both bad teams. I picked the 49ers because they've played so much better at home than they have on the road. They have been they've been the worst defense in the NFL when they've played on the road, and they've had a pretty good backbone at home.
They held Aaron Rodgers to 17 points in their last home game, and it's hard not to watch this matchup and think of the Super Bowl that was on our network this week, where Colin Kaepernick was a strangely timed timeout away from scoring about 30. What would have been?
He was going
38 points to win a Super Bowl. He'd be a Super Bowl champion.
He was
not only that, but with a great performance in the Super Bowl.
Yep. He was in the end zone.
Where's that guy?
it's crazy how much changes, because I mean the Ravens are a shell of that team. That although that team had an up and down defense, that defense is totally gone. The offense no longer has nearly the same threat. It might as well be 15 years ago, and it was only 3 seasons ago, and it's all gone.
You know what struck me from watching the Ravens this week? I love me some Ozzie Newsome, and Ozzie is a unique individual in this sport, in that you can make a compelling argument that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, not only as a player, he's already there, but as an executive as well.
Sure.
He's that good, and he has had a great track record, other than his inability to draft wide receivers, which is odd considering the position he played.
Travis Taylor, Mark
Travis
Clayton.
Travis Taylor, Mark Clayton. I mean, Torrey Smith worked, but, I mean, not exactly.
I'd say they all underwhelmed considering what we thought they would be when they were drafted.
Torrey Smith is by far his best receiver ever taken.
And Breshad Perriman, for whatever reason, it's an injury. Ozzie can't predict those. It hasn't worked yet this year. Maybe it will for the kid eventually. But with the injuries to the secondary, and Ozzie promised he would never let what happened last year with his secondary happen this year. The secondary is not good. They're beset by injuries again. You know, they had to get a guy like Jason Babbitt off the street because Terrell Suggs gets hurt. Then Babbitt had 2 stupid penalties this past week, and he ends up on the street. They're thin at running back. We all know that Justin Forsett was a guy we were happy for him, that late in his career came on, but he probably isn't the long-term answer. Taliaferro's now hurt as well. Sure, the offensive line, it's nice, but then what else do you have there? You got a quarterback, and they don't have playmakers.
It was supposed to be nice. Yeah. It hasn't been
right.
Nice. They run the ball okay, but they do not protect Flacco at all. Flacco is not the problem. I think he's playing just fine. It's really everything.
They have no playmakers on that team.
No, they have no
Smith
speed.
They have none.
Forsett's coming off his best game of the year, but he injured his ankle, and I think late in the fourth quarter overtime, so he might not even play this week.
Yeah, Baltimore would not have lost Buck that Allen. Game if Steve Allen or Steve Smith and Crockett Gilmore were healthy.
Probably considering the state of the Brown secondary, sure, absolutely. And look, maybe Max Williams will be the guy and Crockett Gilmore can make some plays, but you look at that team and you say, all right, without Steve Smith, what are you going to do?
You're going to go 4-12.
Maybe.
That's crazy.
It's and again, I'm not putting it all on Ozzie Newsome's feet, but this was a team that intelligent people said was a Super Bowl team coming into the season.
No reason to think they weren't. They were absolutely a Super Bowl team last year despite a ton of injuries.
Then they are a Josh Scobie missed kick or a Todd Haley bad play call away from being 0-5.
Well, I mean, I struggle to wrap my head around them not going on a run. And at this point, they're so far in the hole, it will probably have them finish 8-8. A complete meltdown with what they have, a quarterback coach and GM and some players on the roster.
Tell you what, they are stunned.
I would be stunned.
Well, going 5-11 or something is not a complete meltdown when you've started 1-4. And what has been consistently bad about them from game to game is not going to suddenly get fixed in a fluky way. They legitimately just can't match up to teams this year.
Connor Orr and myself, we both picked the Ravens. The rest of the crew picked the Niners. So that tells you a lot about where the Ravens
are right
now.
That's wishful thinking. No one wants Jim Tomsula to go crazy. I feel like if he loses one or two more games, he's going to go crazy. Loses
right.
Sweating like an absolute madman. Someone trapped in a runaway train.
Tell him to stop wearing a velvet sweatsuit everywhere for Pete's sake.
That's fair.
Or it's velour, whatever that thing is.
It's comfortable, you can tell.
I like the Ravens here as well. And I'll just tell you from friends back there, I grew up an hour south of there. Those people are stunned. And if they're stunned, I assume the team is stunned that they lost to the Browns. And this isn't me pumping up the Browns. They had beaten them 13-14. They still cannot fathom nor stomach that's where they've fallen to.
Well, that was the game that said,
Mark,
it's true, though. That's the game that told you everything you needed to know about them, because they just assumed, despite that,
absolutely
they're the Ravens and they're going to win.
Get back on track.
And you mentioned the 5-11, and you know, wouldn't be a total disaster coming off 1-3 to start. But this is an organization, they've had one losing season since 2000.
I'm saying it wouldn't be a surprise.
Right,
it would be a disaster.
Yeah.
The Around the NFL television show
is there?
On NFL Network Monday.
Which Greg Rosenthal stole the show on today.
Oh, Greg was on the show today, yeah, the QB.
Getting called names
discussion.
By Mike Silver.
I know. Yes. I should have gone back.
What name did he call you?
That Raider hater. I mean, he just makes any point he can against the Raiders. Acts like he's the most unbiased journalist. Just buries him.
Call him an apologist.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Thursday, a 3-hour show, 2-5. Home run.
You got it right!
Nailed it. Andrew also hosts the Red Zone show on DirecTV on Sundays. Busy man, popular man, a famous man.
Getting recognized on every street
corner. Finally, Dodgers.
Mother only.
Mets. Jacob DeGrom. Zach.
Get a
Mackey.
Haircut. Get a haircut.
And when people listen to this, they will either know that you are a genius, or right, or that you're wrong, because they'll hear it and the game will already be over.
It's amazing that the Dodgers won 4-2 to move on to the NLCS.
Okay.
There you go. And football equivalent to the bat flip before you go.
See, I don't know.
I thought you wanted him to do it.
I don't know that there is a football equivalent to the bat flip. I mean, it isn't exactly T.O. standing on the star. Ray Ratto had a great one today. He said, the baseball unwritten rule is don't do anything to anger me. And clearly Jose Bautista did that. But I think, and I tweeted this morning.
Son of Judy Bautista, by the way.
Stop it. We need to stop calling what Jose Bautista did a bat flip. And I couldn't care less on the sportsmanship here. He didn't flip the bat. He threw it.
Yeah.
He threw it like a javelin.
Right.
Okay, and that is why that the Rangers are so ticked off. He didn't flip the bat. I mean, he threw that thing like a jet. He was trying to take out
somebody. Take it out next time
row.
If you don't want him to flip
the bat. I'm with you. See, you think that I'm somehow criticizing him.
No,
I'm just saying that the semantics are wrong here. It was not a bat flip. Stop calling it a bat flip.
And also, if you want to be mad that you made three consecutive errors before that and misjudged a pop-up.
They choked defensively.
Gag.
I mean,
MLB pain rankings, the Rangers are way up high, I'll tell you that.
I mean, these are little league plays, catch the ball when it's thrown to you at a base. And they couldn't execute those.
I could not agree with you more, and I know nothing about the sport.
Andrew, you've said it all.
That is a Brick Tamlin answer right there.
Andrew, you've said it all. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy yourself at the game, and be careful in the parking lot, for God's sake. It gets raunchy out there.
I'm wearing a Chavez Ravine.
That's a tough one.
It's true.
Good night.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks.
Moving on. Sunday Night Football. Everybody likes Sunday Night Football. The New England Patriots. Oh, they're so good. Everybody loves them. Oh, they've been cleared of any wrongdoing, and they have a hot, sexy, successful quarterback, and they might be the best offense ever. And now they get to face who else but the Indianapolis Colts, the very team who snitched. Snitches get stitches, and all those stitches might get applied Sunday night because the big showdown, revenge, it's the Flakegate.
Snitches get 60 points dropped on them.
Oh. Whoa.
60 burger.
60 burger.
You think
Rodney Harrison, one of your favorite points. Characters in NFL history,
he's a hack,
said this week, this is a good quote, I know a little something. You attack the quarterback, you accuse them of doing some cheating and things like that. They're going to try and put up 50 points and embarrass you, but they are trying to do that every week. Mm-hmm. And he's not talking about just the Colts, but the Colts are coming. They're going to get what's coming to them for subjecting the entire country to the most ridiculous controversy we've ever seen.
Dan got me thinking. Everyone does love these Patriots, as you said. You know, great-looking quarterback, everything. Maybe we could have more than one team of ATL.
No,
the teams of ATL. Let's get the Patriots.
Get the potato sack out.
What a bunch of lovable.
What a throne of sleaze. Get this throne of sleaze out of my life.
What a bunch of lovable upstarts.
I'm on board.
Wes is not crazy with the 60
burger.
Wes
is a Patriots fan straight up, by the way.
He is a
Let's call it like it is.
He's
now.
A football historian who appreciates
I appreciate a team.
He's
a well-run
operation. He's a non-Deflategate fan. And it's not crazy, 60 burger. The 45-7 AFC title game, Patriots only up 17-7 at half. They played the first half the way they did the second. They easily get to 60.
45 is not even their average. They averaged like 47 against the Colts the last four or five times they played.
I will point to history. 2007 Spygate, it was the Jets, of course, that turned in the Patriots. And I remember as a Jets fan peeing my pants. It was a
10 on the scale?
My pants was soaked with all this pee. I needed to change them. I had to change my underpants and my pants. So it was so much pee because it was a bad Jet team. I think they went 4-12 that year. I think Pennington got hurt.
Jets were the least of your problems, it sounds like.
And what happened was at Foxborough, everyone thought it would be a 60 burger, whatever it would be. 20-10 the Patriots won, and Brady, who threw 50 touchdowns that year, was, I think, the only game he didn't have a touchdown pass. All I'm saying is just because they really want to kill the Colts, it doesn't mean it'll necessarily
Well, that was out. A but less effective version of the droid that is Brady. They've updated the model. He's that much more dangerous.
Wait, that's actually a good question. Do you think Tom Brady now is better than Tom Brady 2007, Greg?
No.
No, I don't think it's that close.
So.
I also don't think it's going to help to lose Nate Solder for the season. They're going to try to play Marcus Cannon at left tackle. That's a guy Solder they just paid huge money to before.
And he wasn't playing well.
Wasn't playing great. And by the way, it's going to kill him this week against the Colts.
They lead the league in line changes and adjustments, and it hasn't affected them one bit.
I believe it was Sam Monson at PFF that tweeted out that Brady gets the ball out on average 2.1 seconds, which plays to having taking advantage of if your line isn't that great, being able to get the ball out. So they'll be fine.
Okay, you're right.
Dan, I don't think the Patriots are going to drop 60 points on them just because they're mad. It's because they always beat the living tar out of the Colts.
Mm. Well, that's
true. This is the most one-sided matchup in the NFL.
My music.
Here comes the cherub floating in. There's a harp. Why are there thunderclouds?
I don't know.
I'm changing my prediction. I now predict the final score 84-3. Patriots win. Colts, basically, that's your comeuppance.
One thing, if you're a Colts fan out there and you want hope, Andrew Luck threw with, quote, no restrictions in the portion of practice open to the media.
Is that good
on
news?
Thursday, according to the Indianapolis Star. Well, they're going to lose the 10th best quarterback in the league, Matt
Hasselbeck. He's going to be throwing some with some restrictions on Sunday night.
Yeah. So, it will be, if nothing else, it will be fascinating theater to see how that game plays out, which takes us to Monday Night Football. And I think we all took the Pats there. We did. Monday Night Football, the New York Giants playing their 47th straight primetime game. They head to Philadelphia to face the Eagles. I don't know. This is a tough game because the division's so hard to figure
Seriously.
Out.
Seriously.
Nobody's really good. No one's truly terrible. So every team, anybody can win any of these games. The Giants might not have Odell Beckham, which could be a difference maker. But does anybody have a real strong handle on how this game is going to play out?
No, that's why I'm peeking at the picks. I'm surprised it's so one-sided.
I got a hero pick out of this if we still did hero picks. I took the Giants, but I'm the only one in the group.
Well, I think that's how important Odell Beckham is to the Giants. I think without him, they don't have a chance.
I mean, the Eagles.
Really?
Wow. Yes, I do
I would
think
agree
that.
With that,
the
too.
Eagles have
a chance, I don't know, but they have a chance.
The Eagles are the only team in NFL history that offense could look fairly lousy when they score 39 points, or Sam Bradford at least could have a bad game when they score 39 points. That didn't change my mind on the Eagles offense at all.
Would it kill DeMarco Murray to make a defender miss?
Right.
Ever.
Well, they need to just give him one-fourth the touches they give to Ryan Matthews, we've been saying all summer and fall.
This is what really disturbs me about Chip Kelly, a man who we've called brilliant and innovative and thinks outside the box, addresses problems not by doing what football coaches have always done. And here he is with this real corporate mindset. I've invested so much money into DeMarco Murray that he can't be allowed to fail. I'm going to keep playing him even though Darren Sproles and Ryan Matthews are better than him.
Don't you think it's a little early to pull the plug on Murray like that?
Well,
I don't. No,
until he's playing better. How about that?
I think he's running like he did in December when he wasn't making anyone. With running backs, you can tell how they're running pretty easily. And he looks like Snowsuit Ray Rice right now.
Ryan Matthews, it's easy to tell, even if you were 10 feet away from the TV, which running back it is.
I think you're exactly right. There was one play in that game last week where I could not believe Murray did not make the defender miss in open space. It was such an easy play to make, and he can't move laterally.
His 24-yard gain, which was I think it must have been his longest run of the season, was actually a play where I thought, wow, if you have Ryan Matthews with that hole, he's going 60 yards.
Yeah.
Because you had a pretty slow linebacker catching DeMarco Murray on that play. It's the defense that's the reason they're 2-3. The defense is an above-average defense right now.
Well above average.
Well above average.
They might have the best safety tandem in the league with Walter Thurman and Malcolm Jenkins right now.
And they have one of the best defensive line tandems in the league with Fletcher Cox and Benny Logan. I mean, Benny Logan shows up.
Cedric Thornton.
Every single week, Benny Logan shows up. And Cox, who was great last year. I mean, you had him at one point in the mix of top 10 defensive players. He's backing it up with another big season.
Jordan Hicks, their third-round rookie, has been a mainstay lately in our top 10 rookie of the year watch.
And that's why you can't count out the Eagles as much as I would love to, because I'd like to see Chip Kelly get his comeuppance for all shenanigans over the last couple of years. But at the same time, if they're going to have a top 15 level defense, and then you just count as that offense just going to get going a little bit, that's enough to win the division. This is not a great division.
They were 1-3 2 years ago, but that was an offense that put up, I think, 80 plays of 20-plus yards, which easily led the league. They're like 22nd in that category, and if you watch Bradford, he's basically just throwing to running backs and tight ends outside of Jordan Matthews this season. He's not throwing the ball downfield. They're not creating that. They're not the same offense they were two seasons ago at all.
Last week he didn't really have one really impressive throw, and he had three or four pretty bad ones.
He had a terrible interception.
And yet they still scored 39 points. They moved the ball at the end of the Washington game. This is a team. It's so hard to know what to think. It just hit me, though. Wes called Malcolm Jenkins, who has been fantastic, and Walter Thurman the best safety tandem in the league, did you say?
Yeah.
In the same league as Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor?
How they're playing this year. Earl Thomas hasn't played like Earl Thomas, and Cam Chancellor got worked by the Bengals.
Well, it's a good thing because Byron Maxwell is a disaster.
Well, look at what Chip Kelly's done. Byron Maxwell, he splurges on. DeMarco Murray, even though he already had Ryan Matthews, splurges on him to steal him away from the Cowboys. He gave Riley Cooper 5 years and $25 million. Does Chip Kelly know what he's doing in personnel?
Well, it's kind of like college. You just want someone, then you go get him. So it's like, here, well, I don't know if he's thinking about the value of it all.
Howie Roseman's in some shed on the far side of the practice field they never use, laughing his ass off. He loves it.
John Riggins used to have a 5 o'clock club in the shed at the Redskins practice facility where they would go after practice and drink beer, and they would never let Theismann join.
That tells you a lot. Wow. All right. That's it for another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We'll be back on Sunday night with our big Week 6 recap, so make sure you check that out. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm, the Mailman, the Boss, and Sid behind the glass. Till Sunday night.